Welcome to this episode of The Good Fork with host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. We're bringing you interesting conversations, interesting people with a plant-based twist. Hello, hello. On today's episode of The Good Fork podcast, I've got the talented chef Susanna Gerber. She grew up working in kitchens and around family members who are accomplished cooks and restaurateurs, so food was always a major part of her culture. But before she got into the kitchen, she took another path, a path that some of her immediate family members took to being doctors. And then she took another, running a successful international fashion company in New York City with locations around the world. But during this time, Susanna was also seriously and chronically ill. No doctor could figure it out. And after years of tests, medications, and therapies, she found the answer. Food. Susanna went plant-based, and within 2 weeks of changing her diet, she was asymptomatic, and after 4 weeks, she was off her medication. It was then, in her 30s, she decided to become a professional chef, walking away from her fashion business that had caught the eyes of fashion magazines like Vogue and celebrities including Beyoncé, and she went back into the kitchen. Susanna's culinary career has been impressive to say the least. She's developed food for major retailers like Roots and Whole Foods and worked with some of the largest consumer packaged good companies delivering flavor profiles and products. She served as the executive chef and director for Prest and corporate executive chef for Prestige and Prest. Today, she runs her own food industry consulting company, Haven. Susanna also works with the food and medical industries, bridging the gap of information, skill, and awareness for these foods, working on current medical studies, observing the impact of food and diet on chronic illness and disease. During all of this, somehow, she also managed to find time to write a book, Plant-Based Gourmet, which is due out this year. So let's get to it. Chef Susanna Gerber, thank you so much for being here today. I am so excited to have you on The Good Fork. I've known you for a little more than a year now, and I always love seeing what you're doing and just all the different projects you're working on, because you're working on so many different things all over the place. Thank you for being here. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Diana. It's such a privilege to be able to talk with you right now and explore what's going on in the vegan world. Thank you so much. I love the work that you guys do over at Vegans Baby internationally and in Vegas. So thank you so much.
I love what you're doing too. So I want to just, your story about how you became a chef is just, it's so fascinating to me. Can you share that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the long and the short of it is, I came from this very professional academic background where everyone in my family is doctors. But the undercurrent of my family is that everybody is also a fairly accomplished cook in their own right, with a couple members of my family being pros. And I always thought that I should be involved in food, but I also thought that it just sort of wasn't in the cards for me. So I trotted off to medical school and then made kind of a hard pivot into more like cultural anthropology, working in museums. And in my 20s, I got very critically ill. I'd been vegan in the 90s, kind of junk food vegan style. And I had a family doctor tell me that I needed to stop being vegan if I wanted to live like a happy, healthy life, which kind of also was like the undercurrent of that was like be thin. So I stopped being vegan and went through sort of like a range of different relationships to food over the next, you know, few years in between high school and when I became critically ill. And when I was in my mid 20s, I was running a huge fashion company in New York. We sold things all over the world. It was kind of my like recession business that I developed that sort of borrowed some of my longstanding like art practice with the fact that the country was collapsing. And
were you a designer?
I was the designer. Yeah, it was my company. We were a couturier. We did bespoke costumes and bespoke streetwear for countless resale places, but also A-list celebrities. We did a lot of music videos, a lot of Broadway, a lot of TV, things like the Jimmy Kimmel Live show and Beyonce and Nicki Minaj, Lady Gaga, all of that kind of stuff.
That was so cool.
Yeah, it was a wild ride. I never saw that for myself. It was not in the cards for me at all. And it just sort of developed. I was in New York. I had just finished graduate school, and the entire art world, especially the nonprofit arts world, just died.
Yeah.
Overnight died. And I was already making these kinds of handcrafted fashions for some of the like glitterati in New York and for some of the performers in New York. And it just became where the demand was. And my first big break happened a couple of months into doing it. And it was in New York Fashion Week and was partnering with some major brand designers.
Wow.
in their lookbooks and in their runway shows. So it just sort of ballooned from there. And by the end of it all, the whole time I was in New York, I had this crazy chronic disease, which I never really fully found out all of the ins and outs about it. But like so many other people, it presented as an autoimmune disorder with what's called central sensitization and chronic inflammation and things like fibromyalgia and lupus and MS, and all of these things get discussed in very similar ways. And there was no treatment that had any beneficial effect on me. I would try one medication and develop like a serious allergy or syndrome to that medication. And I was on bed rest sometimes, and I would get all these crazy injuries, and nothing helped, absolutely nothing helped. And so after 5 years of literally trying what my entirely very like medical elite family's access allowed me,
yeah,
I tried every treatment, every doctor, nothing worked. And then I started reading the medical literature, and I became very aware that there was this growing field of research between food and preventive medicine and corrective medicine, and not just food as like lifestyle support. So I went vegan sort of like on a whim on a business trip to Chicago, and I was staying at a friend's house who was vegetarian, and was like, why not? Why not just do it? I was vegan for a long time. Like, I've always kind of like emotionally been vegan, and mm-hmm. did the whole like humane meat thing in my mind when I was mm-hmm. still eating meat. And so it just felt right. I kind of knew that it was the right answer. And within 2 weeks, all my symptoms went away. After essentially living the life of a retired person in my 20s. Yeah.
Wow. What went through your mind when that happened? Like all this time the doctors were telling you need to do X, Y, and Z, and then you go vegan and everything goes away.
I mean, Diana, I want to paint like the most intense picture of this possible for you. So the year prior to going vegan, I was in this radical treatment protocol in New York with a fantastic doctor. This doctor is a genius. His name is Norman Marcus. He wrote the book, End Back Pain Forever. And he's a brilliant man, and he was really onto something. And it was the first, like, it was like the first thing that even chipped away at my symptoms after like 5 years. And that treatment, brace yourself. You go into his doctor's office right by Grand Central Station in New York. You go mm-hmm. in once a week, and he injects, and I am not making these numbers up, 30 injections of lidocaine into a single muscle group once a week, followed by what's called electroconvulsive stimulation at that muscle. So essentially what you're doing is you are pumping a single muscle at a time full of so much lidocaine that it goes numb. And then you're using an electrostimulation to forcibly contract that muscle to move the lidocaine through it all the way. Yeah. And then next week, another muscle. And then next week, another muscle. And then next week, another muscle. Can you fucking believe that?
No, I can't. Like, I think I was actually like struck by a car last year and my back got real jacked from it. And they were like, yeah, we're going to inject your back with like a couple shots. And that is traumatizing to me. Just the thought of it. I can't imagine getting 30 shots a week in one specific muscle group as like a thing. That's just, oh my gosh. Wow. So, I mean, it didn't help though, did it?
No, honestly, it was like you have a headache and you take an aspirin, but tomorrow you get the headache again. If you understand what I mean? It was like the first thing that actually made any difference in this at all. And so that's what I was willing to do. And that's what doctors, geniuses, were recommending for me to do during this whole time. So that's where I was. I was definitely willing to try anything at that point. And so I went vegan. I didn't really expect it to have such a radical impact on my life, but I figured, hey, you know, let's do this, and let's do this with, like, you know, adult brain, making adult health choices as opposed to, like, teenager brain, where, like, all I cared about was that I was eating not animals. So I was eating, like, French fries for every meal. I went vegan. I went vegan. It made a difference in my health immediately. 2 weeks, no symptoms, 4 weeks off of all medication, off of, like, and basically a normal person again. After 6 months, I had lost a considerable amount of weight, was able to start doing things like carrying a bag and exercising again, and, you know, living my life. And with, you know, within 6 months to a year, I had lost 50 pounds, was in the best shape of my entire life. I'm at this point, I'm in my 30s. And it was eye-opening. It was revolutionary to my life. And I, you know, I took a look around in my studio. I had this gorgeous studio in Brooklyn, and was getting calls from, like, Vogue and every other Condé Nast magazine, like, every day, and working with, you know, major stars and major productions. And I just looked around and I was like, this is not what I want to do with my life anymore. And I stopped on a dime. And I, you know, I offered my atelier to my manager, who'd been with me for 3 years or more at that time. And, you know, ran my office remotely while I interned and worked all over the world, studying with chefs, working as a personal chef for people, traveling with people, immersing myself in food and medical research again. And, within about a year or 2 years of doing that, I sold my company completely. We shut our doors, and I diverted all of my clients and all of my accounts and sold off all of my patterns and all of my equipment and all of my stock for a company I'd been running for years and years at this point. And left that business entirely because it saved my life, and I was convinced that I would be able to help other people find that same answer. And I've been doing that on the culinary side, and I've been doing that on the medical research side, and I've been doing that person to person ever since.
That honest, like, and I knew a bit about you obviously before this, but it just blows my mind to be able to walk away from all of that. Is just, it's so incredible. And it just shows how passionate you are about what you're doing. And I think that's just incredible to have people like you in this industry that care so deeply and are able not only to teach, but to show people that, like, this changed your life and it saved your life. So tell me a little bit more about the culinary side, what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I have a book coming out, which I'm really excited on.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Yes. It is an overwhelming process for anyone who hasn't gone through it before. It seems really glamorous until you're right in the middle of it. So I have been working with this publisher now for almost 2 years, and the last year and a half has just been getting my already submitted manuscript ready to actually go out into the world. The book is on pre-order. It's actually heavily discounted right now, about half price on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, which is a perfect time to pick it up right now.
Well, let me you right there, though. When you went through pre-sales, wasn't it, like, top of the charts?
It was top of the charts. Yeah, we were, like, I mean, this is a book that, like, no one has even seen yet, but has been getting such rave reviews from the people who've gotten advanced copies of it. We're endorsed by Derek and Chad Sarno, Chef Chloe, Doyle, Wolfgang von Frankenstein of the Misfits. We've gotten some really great support from some really great vegan celebs and colleagues of mine, and I'm really grateful for that. And so we, you know, we were in like the top 100 vegetable cookbooks, top 50 gourmet cookbooks on Amazon. We were in like the top like 30,000 books on Barnes & Noble. And Barnes & Noble has billions of books. I think that might actually be their slogan. And so, I mean, it's been such an honor and such a privilege. I just can't wait for the book to come out into my hot little hands. But we've got some really great places where you're going to be able to get the book in real life when real life again. And so, yeah, I'm so grateful. And this book is really about fitting a niche that I really felt was ignored for a long time. Now, for me, I had like the Cadillac of culinary backgrounds, right? Like I had exposure to family members who taught for Cordon Bleu. I come from a very published cooking family. So I had a very strong background in formal culinary education myself. And, you know, I worked in restaurants when I was younger, like so many people did. And then, you know, stodged my way training back up when it became time for me to really focus on this. But when I was trying to focus on this and I looked for resources, like professional training programs for chefs that were interested in real haute cuisine or real like nice cooking for vegans, I mean, you would literally have to go through a conventional training program and then apply that knowledge if you were even willing to submit yourself to like all of the bone chopping that goes into culinary education.
Yeah.
And come out the other side of it and invent your way through a whole bunch of more ingredients. And like, that is a 10-year commitment. Like that's a long process.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was hoping that even by now there would be more like formal education that really incorporated strong vegan trainings. And there still really aren't very many. I mean, every once in a while, a class here, a class there, a lot of them are on basics because you don't know whether you're teaching to basic skills cooking level people or to advanced skills level people. So for me, the real gap in the market that I'm addressing here with the book and with some of my classes is foodies can be vegan too.
Yeah.
We need a cookbook.
Yes.
Right. We need a cookbook that can serve as, you know, educational training, whether that's for budding chefs or vegan chefs, or whether that's home cooks that were already keen for the Ottolenghi level of cookbook or for the CIA level of cookbook, Culinary Institute of America cookbook, or, you know, people who are already voracious and very gourmand and experimental and world traveled, right? So, and those are the fun cookbooks anyway, because they've got gorgeous photos and they expose you to ingredients and techniques that you haven't tried. So yeah, I mean, that was what I wanted. I wanted to be able to find that. And so I made it.
Yeah. I mean, very good of you. You know, I mean, it's sometimes you got to just create the wheel.
Yeah. I mean, it was such a privilege to work on this book. It was so fun. I talk a lot about various methods from, you know, molecular gastronomy and modernist cooking techniques that are, you know, they go in and out of fashion, but they, you know, they really, when you really wrap your head around what some of these advanced cooking techniques are, you realize that like just being a vegan cook at all, whether it's total like for funsies in your kid home kitchen or whether it's at the professional level, like you are, in my opinion, you're a magician, but you are doing molecular gastronomy. Like all of the substitutions as vegans, like almost take for granted, these are almost revolutionary to non-vegans.
And
that was the interesting moment in my mind when I realized that like all the foams and emulsions and stuff that are just sort of entry-level vegan cooking.
When I call that entry-level. Like my entry-level is being able to like saute something without burning it.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're experimenting with vegan cooking and you're making your own like vegan mayonnaise.
Yes.
Right?
This is like, yet.
but that level is like every person who comes out of culinary school should get that training, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's something that, like, you know, reading One Green Planet, you might have just, like, decided to look up that recipe one day, and, like, a total amateur who doesn't know anything, like, phrases like mother sauces or anything like that is like making their own aioli, you know.
now that's my next goal, is I'm gonna learn how to make aioli while I'm quarantined. Thank you.
Well, it's actually gonna be on my next cooking show,
so well, even better.
So I think it was really inspiring to me when I saw some of, like, you know, my, like, total heartthrob chef goal people, like at Alinea, for example, doing techniques and things that I took for granted in my own cooking and elevating it to this, like, really high level. And I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Like, we're calling it vegan, and so people are putting it in this category over here, but, like, actually what we're doing is we are really getting down to the granularity of what makes food food.
Yeah.
And how to highlight it and how to play with it. And when you get into that realm, now you're in haute cuisine.
I love that. I think that, you know, Vegas hasn't gotten that far yet, I don't think, when it comes to a lot of vegan food. I know our vegan restaurants don't have what you talk about here. Have you seen this method or this style of cuisine? Can you think of some restaurants you've seen it at for people that you know, maybe are in that city and can go try it?
Sure. I mean, I think the golden example of this, at least in the United States, is Veg in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I think Chef Rich really has his finger on, like, really riding the line between, like, very nice high-end restaurant presentations and plant forwardness, and, like, when to make something look like something else and when to just expose it as it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has restaurants in both Philadelphia and DC. I highly recommend them, Veg and Fancy Radish. I do think that, like, Crossroads Kitchen in LA was sort of, like, the first really famous example of this. But you know, you'd be surprised, like, all of the places that come up with this. Certainly True Bistro in Boston has been going strong for 10 years now with some very strong offerings that are beautiful, fine dining, accessible, and still very, like, comforting and satisfying, not quite as painfully sort of tweezer placed foods. But more and more restaurants all the time are offering these menus and offering these foods that are very high end. I think one of the things that's really incredible about, you know, truly high end Michelin starred restaurants is that part of that Michelin star process is, really nailing the hospitality piece. And that hospitality piece, like, requires being able to serve all patrons and being able to accommodate all patrons. Yeah. So I think you'll actually find some really ingenious offerings from these places that are, you know, 2 and 3 Michelin stars that really go there because that's what they do. They are the top of their game.
Yeah. Do you think for other restaurants, because obviously, like, you and I both really focus on getting more restaurants to implement vegan offerings and to take the menus they have and elevate them. Do you think that the idea of molecular gastronomy when it comes to plant-based foods or putting together cuisines like what you create, do you think it's intimidating to chefs that maybe aren't vegan to create dishes like this?
I mean, certainly. I think so speaking as a chef now, I can say, like, every chef has their go-to ingredients, right?
Yeah.
Like, that might change from year to year, season to season, depending on how you cook. But, you know, you lean on some stuff that's, like, your go-to, right? Like, I feel like some chefs are really known for, like, butter everything. And some chefs are really known for, like, cardamom on everything. Looking at you, Adelanky, right now. And I think, like, that's like how you build flavor. And, like, you know, I go in and out of, like, as a vegan chef, I go in and out of, like, is this going to be a smoked paprika year or, like, a cumin year or, like, you know, this or that. And so I think some of it is, like, being willing to break some of your own habits. Like, sometimes people are really about those habits, or, like, they, you know, they build a sauce and they build a sauce this way and it looks like butter and flour. And so to break out of that is challenging, because if everything is sort of built on that foundation, like that's going to be hard to address. Like, even though there are butter substitutes, that's like the cornerstone of your cooking, you know? So I think that is daunting for some chefs. And then, you know, other chefs, although I do think this is changing, like have a little bit of an attitude of it. Like they want to choose what they want to choose.
Yeah.
And no one's going to tell them what they can and cannot cook with.
Yeah.
Which in my opinion, aside from the vegan thing, like is an outdated, like 1980s, like who the F are you kind of mentality anyway. But you know, we are chefs. Like this is like, we're kind of treated like garbage most of the time. And when we can choose what we want to do or have the creative like direction that we want, like it's kind of our thing, right? So like leave us alone. So I sort of get it from both angles.
Yeah. But
we're in a food culture time right now where only the top celebrity chefs like really get that latitude, and the rest of the world, the food culture is, you know, almost like a Rubik's cube of like unmeetable customer demands and expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's dizzying, no matter what side of the counter you're on. So, it's definitely hard to imagine a lot of people replacing things. I within the vegan food and beverage industry, like I'm still having trouble prying that soy milk out of people's hands.
Really?
Yeah, I am. Huh. It really depends. Like, I mean, if you are one of these sort of like original crop of vegan chefs and mm-hmm. you have been cooking the way that you cook, like it's that same attachment that someone else has. Like they don't want to risk the change to their flavor, texture, etc. by switching to a more trend forward plant milk. And it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. And then just add vegan before of it. So if you're going to be trend forward, or if you're going to have your finger on like what's happening right now and you're experimental and you're really in love with the evolution of food culture, then you're just going to be rotating through a bunch of stuff anyway and being willing to take some risks and not always playing it safe in your development phase. And otherwise you're like, you know, you want to bang it out and you've got your old faithful and like, you're not trying to be like, you're not trying to offer like gluten-free or health-free options. And you know, it's two very different mentalities in kitchen.
So what do you think, because I know obviously like you consult with restaurants, what do you feel holds a lot of restaurants back from like being successful when it comes to their menu? Like, and let's just talk vegan restaurants first.
Menus, man.
Yeah.
So I'll say this, menu development is like one of my absolute favorite things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think like a really successful menu, sadly, like menu development and recipe development and like the actual cooking on the line and prep, mm-hmm. they're like oceans apart. So I actually think one of the main things, the problems for these restaurants, especially like smaller independent restaurants, is the person writing the recipes and cooking the food is also designing the menu, sometimes with some feedback from like an owner or maybe a manager or whatever, but usually not. And this is like a sort of a case of like, you're too close to it, you know, if you are an accomplished chef and you can step back and most of your like operations, like you've got a really great sous chef who's like throwing the specials out on the regular and you're not the one on the line all of the time, or you're not on the floor all of the time, and you can step away and go on buying trips and tasting trips and really have experiment time, that might be different.
Yeah.
But if you're like really running things, like how could you possibly have the time, right?
Yeah.
Let alone energy or the inspiration to step back and be like, how do I write a good menu? Even with the foods you're already offering, like how can I phrase this? How can I present this? Like, and then there's a real science to like the order that things appear on the menu. There's a really great book on the subject that is sort of my Bible that really dives into some studies on how customers experience different aspects of the restaurant, from the word choice that's used to the color of the lighting or the color of the plate. These things really do influence. And that book is called The Perfect Meal. It's really worth looking at because it's completely scientific, looking at these population studies and doing some actual experiments with people. And it's really guided my understanding of like how important it is to assume all of these aspects of your restaurant are really marketing pieces. Your menu is a reflection of something that's a product, but it is like the third level of market explanation. And if you can't entice people to purchase or to purchase more or to purchase things that align with what they actually want, and so they have satisfaction from it, you're going to be in trouble. So I cannot stress this enough, whether it's working with me or someone else, like hire a consultant at least from time to time, if not work with someone regularly who is distant from your restaurant and can step back and take a look at how you are performing from the outside.
Yeah.
And then can take that outsider's perspective and kind of like put it into orbit with the realities and the real obstacles that face your restaurant. Cause I think this is a key problem for a lot of people. You either end up with these pie in the sky ideas that like you could never execute or, and so I see this a lot with like co-owned restaurants, which is most restaurants, like one person who's like in the weeds all of the time is like, give me a break. I can only do so much. And then the other person who's like not weeded all the time is like, well, why can't we do this and this and other places do this? And you're like, whoa.
Well, let me tell you.
So yeah, I mean, it's important. And I've seen it can be night and day different for that kind of support and to translate from front of the house to the back of the house. And so I do think that like menu design is about, in my opinion, is about trend casting.
Yeah.
About really hitting those keywords and making people salivate from like the intellectual experience of thinking about the food that they're going to have. And then it's up to you to surprise or, you know, defy expectation, depending on what your concept is, what it actually lands on the plate and bring them into the experience of being there. But that menu, the difference between having something on your menu and not on your menu is usually about 70% lower sales volume when you're counting on it just being communicated or asked about. Obviously there are some exceptions to this, like in really hip places where like the off menu items are like sort of like the in the know kind of like hip access.
Yeah.
But even still, like they're still not going to be selling as much of it. And that's kind of part of the point, is you're creating a different kind of excitement.
Yeah.
And that's what a menu is. It's a different kind of excitement for your food.
So I want to go back really quick. What book is this that you got this from?
It's called A Perfect Meal.
Perfect Meal. And so in your opinion then, which restaurant, like based on everything you just said, which is a perfect example of implementing this?
There are so many different positions presented in that. Like that is an academic just overview of amazing things. But I mean, I'm just going to mention them again. I think the restaurant that has truly blown my mind every time I pay attention to them is Alinea.
Alinea.
I mean, they're like the golden standard of like just totally taking you outside of yourself and like composing an experience. I mean, people will either love it or they will hate it, but they're going to have some kind of strong reaction to it. And I think he has earned every one of his stars.
And that's Chicago, yeah?
Yeah, Chicago.
Okay. I really wanted to go there when I was in Chicago last month, but unfortunately I wasn't able to. But I've heard amazing things about that restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredible and his restaurant's incredible. But, you know, I think like in various ways, people have these kinds of experiences all of the time. I went to a new restaurant in San Diego in February, March. It had just opened. It's called The Plot.
Ooh, great name.
And they, Yeah, it's a great name. And they, it's a successful local restaurateur, owns multiple restaurants that aren't vegan. This is his all vegan concept, like adjacent to two of his other like omni full spectrum restaurants. And, you know, everybody talks about Southern California, like it's like this paragon of like vegan. And I just don't see it. Like, I really don't. I go to Southern California 4 or 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see it. I think, you know, 20 years ago, that was true when the rest of the country like really wasn't on board.
Yeah.
And they've stayed the same ever since.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of the world has like evolved forward.
Yeah.
Not to say that the food isn't great in California, it is, but it's not like leading the charge in like vegan development. But this restaurant was fantastic from the decor to like the energy of the space. And for a new restaurant, like that's impressive. I'm sorry. Like if you have your crap back together when you're like, I mean, brand spanking new, like opening week level.
Brilliant.
I just want to give you like a slow clap. You know?
I mean, wouldn't it be great if every restaurant that opened was at that level, you know, when they open?
Oh yeah. I mean, amazing. I mean, their customer experience is on point. Their social media is on point. I pray for them because obviously, you know, they opened like days before everything had to shut down. So
I know.
Yeah.
So what city, I mean, you travel often. What city do you think has like the most like up and coming vegan food scene?
Up and coming or like the most vibrant?
You can say either one or both if you have answers to both.
Cool. So honestly, it's going to surprise a lot of people, but like Philadelphia is where I go to eat. Like if I am just trying to get fat for the weekend, that's where I'm heading.
Okay.
The density of vegan spaces from like Charlie Was a Sinner and Bar Bon Bon to like Hip City Veg and then Veg and V Street and Blackbird and I could list these all day. Grindcore House, like every imaginable thing from like a heavy metal coffee shop to a pizza place to a fine dining, really fine dining restaurant. I mean, and then like a speakeasy kind of style bar. Oh, I mean, come on.
Man.
I mean, it's, yeah. Philadelphia is impressive. And okay. As someone who grew up nearby Philadelphia and like hating Philadelphia, I'm from DC.
So, yeah. You don't go to Philly. Yeah. You don't go to Philly. If you're from like the DC metro area, nah, you don't, Philly's not on your list.
Filthy dirty. You mean filthy dirty? Yeah, no. And now I go to Philadelphia. I make a point of going to Philadelphia literally any time I'm on the East Coast. I go probably about 6-7 times a year. And when I lived in New York, I used to go back and forth to DC all of the time and I would stop on the way. It was just kind of a pain in the ass.
A little bit, yeah.
And I would stop all the time. Like, So it's highly recommend it. And so in terms of like up and coming or sort of burgeoning scenes, I see them popping up everywhere. There are some of the obvious ones like Portland, Oregon have just like a bazillion options and ever growing, and Austin, Texas too. But I was very impressed by the Las Vegas scene. I know you're like waiting for that fine dining restaurant to land in Las Vegas.
Yes.
From my perspective, Vegas was, you know, I go to Vegas not super often, but like, you know, every couple of years. It was night and day different from the last time I went there.
100%. I mean, from the time I launched Vegans Baby in 2016 to now, it's an entirely different world. Mm-hmm. Here. Entirely different and amazing. I'm so thrilled that it is.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you know, for me, like the attraction of Vegas is never like casinos for me. So like, and it's become such a food mecca and, you know, not my kind of food usually. So now when I go there, I have a great time. So I think it's a great destination. And I think wise people will develop that further. I mean, there are some great restaurateurs like in New York who have like, I mean, 20 concepts. I'm looking at you, Rafi. You know, it's people like that should really be like cultivating the markets of Las Vegas, like the other major restaurateurs. They have New York and Vegas, like those are the two.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time, really. Yeah. I'm surprised like Matthew Kenny doesn't have something out there. since he has so much in like Southern California and so elsewhere. Much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I do enjoy Double Zero.
Yeah. I mean, you know, pizza.
I don't know if you know this about me, but like, so I typically, like, if I have the choice, I'm always going to go like plant-based versus like vegan junk food. But
right.
You put pizza in front of me, like if I go to any restaurant that has vegan pizza, I'm going to try it. Unless I just have no faith that it's going to be good, I'm going to try it because I found my favorite pizza and it's in Chicago at My Pie. I had it when I was last month and it's $99 to ship two frozen pies from there to Vegas. And like, it literally crossed my mind to do it because I want to eat really good pizza so badly. And we have great pizza here, but I am always looking for like some damn good pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that Miyoko's is developing a pizza cheese right now, which I'm really excited about. It's not even anywhere near to market yet, but,
have you had a chance to try it or you just know she's working on it?
I'm just going to not answer that question, but, Miyoko has a lot of really amazing stuff in the works right now, yes. Which I'm really excited about. And, I think pizza is one of those things. I think like cheese is still kind of like the white whale, to use a totally non-vegan reference. Like, getting that perfect cheese is definitely still on the horizon. And there are some really great consumer packaged goods companies, but also like, you know, cell agriculture, that are using fermented processes and cell replication to try to bridge that gap in like a variety of different ways. But I'm with you. Like, one of the things about Matthew Kenny's food that I really like is like, even when it's junk food, it's still kind of not. He's really good at that. They make all their stuff in house. Like, we're not talking about these like modified starches and like crazy, like, you know, stabilized foods that are like, sitting there that they're making their foods with. Like, they make everything from scratch. And, so I really like that about him too. I try to eat healthy as often as I can. I think it's really important to send a good message that way, but like, I love me some junk food, let me tell you. So it's kind of a balance, and I do feel better about my choices when I'm making those all within the sort of vegan category, because it's all sort of a one step better, even when it's not so good. But yeah, I mean, it's a crazy world out there. I love some of the work that I do takes me all over.
Yeah.
And I have found incredible vegan offerings in little towns of India, the mountains of Romania. I mean, you name it. Like, it's a different world out there.
I can't wait to be able to get back on an airplane again. Ever since I went vegan, I basically travel for vegan food. Like, if I'm going somewhere, I plan my entire day around like 5 to 6 meals and just like walk from restaurant to restaurant to restaurant. Even if I'm not hungry, I keep going. But it's my thing is to go and explore all these other places that have vegan food, because it's not like what we have in Vegas. It's not like LA. I was in Paris and I had Parisian peasant food when I was there. And it was phenomenal. Never have I had that anywhere in my life. But yeah, there's this.
Wait for my book.
Oh, girl. I'm concerned that I'm not going to be able to. I feel like my very basic chef brain is going to have a hard time doing stuff.
I don't think so.
No, really, you think I can nail it?
I think you can totally nail it.
I did for the first, because I have found that I am really, really terrible at following recipes. Like, I, without a doubt, always mess something up in the process. And it's either it works out okay or it's just inedible. But I made a recipe the other day. Chef Sheridan Sue, he's a local chef, but he was nominated for Best Chef of the West by James Beard 2 years in a row. He's phenomenal. And he gave me his recipe for vegan Dan noodles. And I didn't mess it. The only thing I did wrong was I didn't ladle the Dan noodle sauce. I didn't put that in a bowl and then put the noodles on top of it. I dumped the sauce on the noodles because that was just how it ended up, but I did it. So I feel like that was a very good stepping stone to being able to cook other dishes and not mess them up. So I'm going to need you to like go through your book and just earmark a couple of the ones that like are Diana proof would be awesome. And then
I can tell you right now that my French Tien, it's kind of ratatouille-like. It's a lot of slicing vegetables. So get yourself a good mandolin glove and a mandolin and then just slice away. But
I don't talk about mandolin. But okay,
talk about like, or like a Cuisinart with like a slicing blade, a food processor with a slicing blade. And, you know, it's colorful and it's bright and you can do it with almost any vegetable. And it's definitely French peasant food, definitely classic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't go wrong because there is no wrong to it. Okay. It's basically how it turns out is what you've done to it. So whether you slow roast it or whether you bake it in its sauce or whether you layer things sideways or vertically like a flower, like it's really up to you. And I do think that like for savory cooking, especially not so much baking, but like for savory cooking, like the recipe is like a jumping off point. What you should be getting from a recipe is really like what the proportions look like for success, right? Like how much salt is too much salt and what temperature these vegetables like to be cooked at. And so start to piece together some like patterns that you see, right? Like, oh, this and this go well together. And this is cooked in fat, whereas this is sort of dry toasted first as a spice, you know? And, you know, what temperature to roast a vegetable at. Like, and once you get these kinds of patterns put together, you should be able to look at a recipe and be like, oh, you know, like, I don't really like zucchini, but maybe I can use eggplant instead. Or okay. I don't really want to like wash a bunch of stuff. So like, maybe I can build this in one roasting pan instead of doing this on the stovetop and this in the oven and have two things at the same time and just sort of build from there once you understand like what the goal that you're going for is. And I really think that that's like part of what I try to address in the cookbook is like, how do you do this successfully? Like, how do you go through start to finish? Like, do you need to prep some of this the day before? Because like your job is a job that is not actually chopping vegetables all day. Like, do you need to cut this the night before so that you come home from work and all your veg is already chopped? So now all you have to do is like marinate and stir fry? Or are you going to like understand that like you preheat the oven, so now you've got like 10 minutes and in that 10 minutes while your oven is heating up you can do this and then you start that and while you do that you can do something else. So something that would have taken you 2 hours if you did everything one after the other, you can actually start to overlap and actually get it done in 45 minutes. So
I love that. Will you teach me how to cook?
I would love to teach you how to cook.
Can we just do classes, please, and just come to Vegas and just teach me?
That is definitely a goal. I would love to do that. We should set the date.
I would like you to come tomorrow because I mean, obviously, I feel like everyone in quarantine right now, I have spent more money on groceries than I've ever spent in my entire life.
Yes.
And I've cooked more in the past 3 weeks than I've ever cooked in my life. And I'm obviously like, I mean, I eat out for a living. So being home and cooking, I'm like, oh, this, like, I mean, I already had so much respect for chefs, but like now I'm like, man, like, you know, I'm so grateful for the meals I get that I don't cook because they're very, very good. And, you know, it's just, it's a whole different ball game when you know you don't know what you're doing and you're trying to make really good food. So I when is your cookbook coming out? When can I have a copy in my little hands?
So right now everything got pushed back because of the reason everything else got pushed back. Yeah. So I think we're looking at July now.
Okay.
But you know, it's anybody's guess really. But in the meantime, you can find great recipes. I'm publishing about 2 to 3 recipes for everybody to use, not related to the book, on my Instagram at Chef Susie Gerber, S-U-Z-I is how I spell Susie. So at Chef Susie Gerber on Instagram, and you can follow my blog. I have guest bloggers on all of the time, and that's at Big Picture Vegan or bigpicturevegan.com. Both of those have recipes and travel advice, health and wellness oriented stuff too. I do host a weekly cooking show every Sunday called Sunday Brunch with Chef Susie at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, live on Instagram, and then 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday called the Cook at Home Show, which features a bunch of different ways to cook things that you might have on hand, shelf-stable goods, common substitutions, everything from things like making seitan to making your own oat milk. And we made a completely sugar and oils-free mac and cheese sauce that I made broccoli and cheddar soup awesome. Out of and mac and cheese all within 30 minutes.
Yum.
Just to show you guys what's possible. And I do invite requests as well as Q&A and show and tell at the end of every show. So I encourage everybody to come and hang out, show me what you're eating and what you're cooking, and let me know if you're having a hard time either finding any food item or cooking with a food item that you have. It's definitely a passion of mine to help people solve some of these problems and stay healthy and stay vegan.
Oh, I love you. You're just fantastic.
we've got the feeling is mutual.
Oh, I can't wait to see your face again. Is there anything you want to add? You told everyone where they can find you. Any parting thoughts?
Now's the great time to go vegan. Whether by the time you're hearing this, this pandemic has magically dissolved into the past, which is definitely not going to be true, or not. The number one thing that we can help people with right now is by eating healthy foods that not only support good health, but actually also can intervene. And that means return, reverse, or correct some major chronic underlying conditions. At the beginning of this interview, we talked about how I cured my own major chronic illness with plant-based diet. And the same is true for the top 6 or 7 major comorbidities. That means underlying chronic illnesses from cancer and diabetes to hypertension and kidney and liver diseases. These things are lifestyle diseases. They have a lot to do with the food that we eat and the way that we live. And by making steps right now, today, with your diet, small steps that maybe become big steps later or maybe go away when danger is gone, but by making a 2-week commitment now to going plant-based or shifting your diet more towards plant-based, you may be able to make significant impact in your chronic underlying diseases, which is great news any day of the week, but could also be the difference between life and death if when you get exposed to coronavirus, and can certainly be the difference between going into the ICU or needing hospitalization. Yeah. And on behalf of all medical professionals everywhere, we need to flatten that curve. And this is the next wave of that. So a little bit of seriousness here. Yeah. Like, I want to help you go plant-based. There are a million people out there that want to help you go plant-based. Yeah. And even if you only commit to that for 2 to 4 weeks just to flatten the curve, like, please stay safe, stay home, and eat more plants.
Chef Susie Gerber, thank you so much for being on The Good Fork. I appreciate you, and I look forward to our next conversation face-to-face, please. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of The Good Fork. I am host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. I appreciate you all so much. For more on this episode and other show notes, head over to vegansbaby.com and click on The Good Fork podcast. And for more vegan dining, vegan news, and where to go eat in Vegas and beyond, head over to vegansbaby.com. Have a great one.